It is Sportsfeld for another month. It is another week, another month. It is July officially. It is about to become trade deadline month. It's about to be time for that action, and the Blue Jays got out ahead of it this week amid, people wanting them to make changes and wanting to address some of the things that they needed to address. They basically set the market off, right? There wasn't really a deal. I don't think there was a deal in the league really before this, but they acted pretty quick.
I am upset at how excited this kind of middle of the road trade got me. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's
like it's. I actually think it's a really good deal.
Sure, but listen, you're getting rid of Joe Panic alone. I already like the deal. You know,
it's not exactly, trading for David Price.
No,
which is I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you would think my mood and excitement level after the trade went through would have been a larger trade.
Yeah,
that's all I mean.
It's a nice trade to do a month out of the trade deadline to to just sort of start that momentum of doing moves to address your needs. And we had talked at length in the last month about the bullpen being a need. The move is Adam Simber from the Miami Marlins, who are a bad team going nowhere, that we saw the Blue Jays beat up a bunch of times. And then Corey Dickerson, who is in a walking boot, is already moved to the IL, but basically it's the money on Dickerson so that they can pay basically nothing to get Simber, because the cost is Joe Panic and a 24-year-old 37th round pick who was playing in high A.
Yeah, and I think the money-wise, it equals... I think I read that the Jays are adding, $1 million to their salary, and that's it. So I'll take that move all day.
Going to be fun to watch Simber pitch for us for a change. I've seen him pitch... I believe he was in Cleveland for a little bit. And, of course, you saw him when he was with Miami recently, the really low delivery, the super submarine... it's a totally different look. He doesn't throw hard at all. It's like mid to high 80s, but he's going to be completely different. And he's pitched competently at the major league level for an extended period, which is something you basically cannot say for anybody on the current roster.
Yeah, and it's exactly what we were talking about. You know, it's the cycling through of bullpen arms and bringing in fresh blood. And even today with activating him and Matz and DFAing Beasley and sending down Pamps and who's the other guy they sent down?
Tony Castro sent down as well.
Tony Castro, which I think is more a temporary thing just for matchups, but it's still, regardless of what the reasoning is behind who's being sent where, it's what we were talking about in our sort of meltdown day of just cycling through some bullpen arms and not just trotting the same guys out there hoping for the best, which I think is a good thing. And I think the sort of selling, I don't know if selling high is the right term for what happened with Joe Panic, but selling Joe Panic to me feels very much in line with what we talked about this offseason when it came to guys like Derek Fisher and Shun Yamaguchi, where, this front office in 2019 probably holds on to him because he's a good clubhouse guy. And they're still sort of developing and building, and he's a professional and all that stuff. And then cutting bait on him now and getting potentially something very valuable in return is exactly, I think the timing is good, even though you could argue it took too long. But as you say, it's a month out from the deadline, two huge series against the Rays coming up in the next 10 days. And I think this kind of trade does show fans, the players, that they're not necessarily content to just sort of sit on their laurels and see what happens.
And there's a lot of bad money on bad teams out there if this is the route they're going to go. It does paint a nice picture of the cost that you can expect to pay. I mean, maybe this was an extreme. We talk about giving up nothing. Joe Panic is, if he wasn't the 40th man on the roster, he was no higher than maybe 38th. Maybe Beasley below him, but Santiago Espinal playing just well enough to say, it's not a big enough downgrade for us that we need to hold on to Joe Panic. that price being set out there for a guy like Simber, who, again, it's not blow you away with anything. The numbers are fine, respectable. ERA is under 3 this year, and he's, you know, a mid-3s, low strikeout, soft contact guy his whole career. But, you know, that level of price and slightly above it, it does scare. I think it'll help a little bit with, like, the scaring off of sometimes the idea of loading up and adding these pieces. You worry about, you know, prospect cost or prospect capital. I think they're, to address the bullpen at least, and maybe not the back end, the elite part of it, but just to get that depth and allow them to have a number of arms to pick from, that price is not going to be exorbitantly high.
No, and I think, you know, I think that sort of the last week and a half, I guess, of good baseball from this team and playing, obviously matchup is a part of it, but I don't know about you, but I am certainly feeling less like go out and get Max Scherzer kind of, which like would be lovely and do it. But like, it's, I am feeling the win streak and the quality of play and even like very generally the starter quality, which has been solid, is, you know, these smaller shoring up bullpen with, as you say, taking on bad money or whatever, is that might, and we know that that's this front office's strength as well, that might be the route to go rather than, you know, the big swing for the fences move, which obviously we would welcome, but maybe it's not as necessary as we maybe thought it was.
I'm glad you bring that up because our good friend Drew Fairservice and our good friend Caitlin McGrath on Spin Rate caused they did a good job. They've been doing a good job lately of sort of coming up with trade scenarios. They had a good one recently with talking about trading Nate Pearson for basically a 1B sort of pitcher. And the idea this week was with how well, you know, Reese McGuire has played once again. You know, he's starting to have multi-hit games, and they've been getting literally nothing from the position previous to you know, this sort of season. They're very little from Jansen, literally obviously nothing from Riley Adams, and then some glimmers of hope with the bat on Alejandro Kirk. And the situation proposed basically by them is this a great opportunity to sell high on Kirk if you don't really believe in his ability to be a catcher sort of long term?
I am glad you brought that up because the comments from Ross Atkins came out about an hour ago before we recorded this about the catching is very interesting. He was asked directly. I don't know who asked the question, but fucking kudos to whoever did. Or maybe he just offered it. I don't know. I didn't watch the press conference. But Atkins said, Montoyo today said the Jays will not carry 3 catchers, and Atkins said we're going to have some decisions on our hands. Obviously this is with both Jansen and Kirk now working their way back playing in AAA. Expect them to be healthy and ready to return in about a week, I would assume. I don't know, but that has added an interesting trade chip for sure. And I guess my question to you is, of the three, obviously probably selling high on Kirk has the most value, but of the three, what would you be looking at?
Well, I'm glad you asked that as well, because for as good as Reese McGuire has been in this, for a second time over a 30-game span, his first 30-game span, he was even better than he has been in this 30-game stint and very terrible in the one in between. But, you know, every team in the league had a chance to get him for free very recently. So as impressed as he may be right now, you know, his stock around the league was obviously not very high very, very recently. As much as it would be nice to be like, now you move McGuire because he'll never be more valuable, it's like he probably isn't all that valuable in the first place. Jansen, of course, is a guy that we hear all the time everybody really wants to project on, and, you know, by all accounts is more or less somebody they want working with Ryu. And if you believe in his bat, that's great. He hasn't done it at the major league level, but, you know, he is sort of maybe the floor is a little higher with him, I guess, sort of is the thing. As you know, you're going to be able to get certain things that maybe he'll go into extended hitting slumps, but he'll bring something on a fairly regular basis. So that's where Kirk is sort of, he is almost has more value by how little he's been seen, right? Because
right.
He didn't have a minor league year the year he got called up. And the year before that, he was, I believe it was single A, right? So it's the story was jump from single A to the major leagues. He's had two, you know, less than Reese McGuire size bouts of success. And then really nobody knows in terms of the true ceiling and sort of he came out of nowhere and he had injuries before that. So there isn't a huge track record of success to pull from it. It's everything he's done is been successful, similar in some ways to Nate Pearson, where like he's had success where he's gone. It's just there isn't a huge sample of information to pull from. So that is sort of why you think, you know, and with his age being so young and the fact that he's hit at the major league level, you know, at all for a catcher, that's where you get the argument of that, like, that's an easy guy to sell. And it depends, again, your mileage may could vary on things like how much Gabriel Moreno matters in this equation, which to me, not much at all. It, only because like it's one thing to call up Vlad and, you know, or Bo or even Kevin. A catcher has so much they have to learn when they arrive to a team. So it's hard for me to pin everything to that.
Yeah.
You sort of don't
and
know.
And now he's out for an inordinate amount of weeks with a fractured thumb. So that's I think you could argue the Moreno injury is a little unfortunate timing in terms of sorting out who to trade.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think I want Moreno really factoring heavily into plans.
No, absolutely right. Absolutely right. It's sort of the I agree with you. And I think that's a great point. But I don't know that he would have ever figured into it this year, no matter how well he hit, really. To be truly. I mean, maybe there's a chance that I end up being dead wrong on that, but I think...
Well, I mean, there's four, especially with, like, literally four guys ahead of him right now on the big league depth chart.
Yeah, but...
You can argue whether they should be ahead of him or not, but they are, so...
Yeah, I think Jansen is a good example of why I'm a little cautious about Moreno, is, like, you know, the thing on Jansen was sort of the opposite of the player he's ended up being, where it was, like, the bat is going to be there no matter what. He really needs to learn on his defense. And then it was so much for him to pick up major league defense, and he really hasn't hit for an extended period at all. So
yeah,
it's tough to just come in and become a major league catcher, especially in the middle of a season, especially on a contending team. Like that's,
and I mean,
it's a big ask.
How in literally our lifetimes? Let's not even talk about the Blue Jays. Like in our lifetimes, there's I don't know. I can name like six, like trip. Like I'm using AAA as like. Not minor leagues, but like six, like big time, like these are the catchers you want kind of guys.
Yeah.
I mean? Like I know there's more than six, but you know what I mean? It's a small number.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you could argue to the counter, of course, is that if Kirk can hit it all, that is sort of what makes him somebody that you keep because, you know, that's value. But again, my thought on that a little bit is like that. It's not like they're hurting for his bat, right? They're not.
Right.
It has been great. McGuire's ability in the last 2 weeks to turn the lineup over hitting ninth has led to them easily scoring three and four runs in an inning several times. That's been great. But, that occasional spark versus, like, the pop and the slightly better hitting of Kirk, I don't know. It's not what they're hurting for at this moment. And you do get to those stages of these kind of builds where you solve one thing, not that they're solved, but like the offense is so good. They said something in the broadcast yesterday that they have more runs through this many games than any team. Oh, it was four guys with 50 RBI already. Like Grichuk has 50 RBI right. Just from being in the lineup every day. Like it's got nothing to do with how well he's played, right? Like it's incredible.
I saw a thing today that Marcus Semien's now of the five like major shortstop free agents coming up after this season, which are Marcus Semien, Trevor Story, Javi Baez, Carlos Correa, and Seager. Semien has the highest WAR and is one behind Correa in highest OPS plus of those five guys since 2019.
And has shown no signs that he's like lost the ability to play shortstop.
I think I'm surprised the noise around. I know it is a little bit, but I'm surprised the noise around extending him isn't louder.
I mean, it seems foregone when especially when you say what you just said there, that he's going to go to free agency. He would be,
yeah,
you know, he would be.
He'd be a fool.
Or he'd have to get a very fair market offer, right, from the team.
Yeah.
And these are the dueling things that are happening at the same time. The conversations about trading Kirk and the conversation about, you know, the limited time that Semien is actually here. Does his timeline sort of accelerate? Like, man, he's been better than they expected, and now they have, you know, they have a solid case for, we said before, three quarters of their infielders being all stars. So like, it's a pretty solid case for Bo and Vladdy and Semien. So, you know, if he's only going to be here 1 year, maybe that is the time to make that move. It depends. This is the thing we've been weighing, right? It's the same with Pearson rumors. It's the same with any of these guys that you are dreaming on, just not just for this year, but for the future, versus sort of a more guaranteed 1 to 2 year thing.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, I think it's, I lost my train of thought. You just said something. I was like, that's what I was going to say. Now it's gone.
Anyway,
edit this out.
I'm in for Simber.
Yeah, me too.
Anybody but the guys we've had to watch. And Jeremy Beasley getting DFA'd, end of an era, as like the pure 2021 first half of the season, like this game is over guy. There has to be one guy in every staff, and Jeremy Beasley has been that guy.
Yeah, and I think there's the rumors today that they're looking at Rodriguez in Pittsburgh. Bring him to me.
I love it.
Bring him to me now. But he is very good. But if those are the kind of moves they're looking at, and with, that's what I was going to say, with Semien sort of being who, I think we're now deep enough into the season that this is who he is.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't think it's too long for it to be a streak. But with him doing that, and now obviously the addition of Springer, it's just like, yeah, guys have their struggles, you know, how much faith do you want to put in Grichuk or Gurriel these days, or even Biggio on and off, but up and down, it's just solid. Like I can't believe the comfort of, now that Springer's back, looking at sort of the daily lineup and just being like, damn, it's good.
Yeah, 1 through 5.
It's really fucking good.
1 through 5 is 1 through 5 every day, and that's the thing, right? Is you're mentioning your Grichuk and Gurriel and Biggio sort of slots. Like when that's the eighth slot, then that's
right.
that's good problems to have. And I think that is what is sort of indicative of this panic being shipped out and Simber and maybe Dickerson, right? We don't want to almost skipping over like that Dickerson is, it's possible that he plays this year and is a left-handed bat that, you know, I've talked about wanting to extend that bench a little bit. I don't expect much, and they already have plenty of outfielders, so who knows what that ultimately turns into. But
Atkins said today that they are, I mean, who knows with these guys, obviously.
Yeah.
But Atkins said today that they are extremely encouraged, and it's been nothing but positive, and he expects to see him in uniform with the Jays this year.
So there you go. That sort of, the good part of that is like, there it really isn't like you're going into this and being like, man, they have a lot of things they have to address. Like the offense is, you can add, we've talked many times, the third base need isn't even really there like it was offensively. Mm-hmm. Like you've been playing with really nothing defensively from your third base. If you could just solve it defensively, it almost doesn't matter about the hitting from there. So that'll be that's a really small thing. And then it's like, again, we've seen the price for bullpen guys. So they're in a good position if they want to actually, you know, make a bold move here. The pieces they have, we talk about the sort of the Kirk trade idea. Like when you see the price for outfield help for third base and for relievers, like, boy, you can really, I think you can really pull something in with a trade like that.
Right. And I think that we've sort of touched on this hypothetically, but now that we're in the middle of it, of this sort of easier patch the schedule right before the deadline being sort of beneficial in terms of seeing who they are. But even more so now that they've taken advantage of the beginning of this patch of schedule with these two series against the Rays coming up, by the All-Star break, you'll know exactly what to do. Like if they take 2 of 3 from Seattle right now and then take 2 of 3 from Baltimore next week, if they win those Rays series, they're right there.
Mm-hmm.
if they get swept by the Rays twice, maybe you don't make the bigger moves. So it's somewhat unfortunate for such massive games to be in fucking first week of July, but at the same time, it's probably better for figuring out what to do.
Yeah. And listen, we talked before they went on this run that we wanted to both allow for this opportunity for them to go on a run and really look good and allow for that, as well as remembering the issues. And I think they've done a good job keeping both of those things in mind. And I do want to give credit to the team that I think they deserve. And for a team that is made up of a lot of young guys, you know, we hear a lot about them being a young team. They have really bounced back from any losing streak, any ugly stuff. Like, they really come out every day, and it's a brand new thing. And it really has been impressive how much less caught up they get than, say, I do when they lose.
Also, not only that, but, like, the like, you've made the point before that you thought there's a little bit of swagger coming to the team, and obviously winning helps that. But there does seem to be a, not just a swagger, like, this is going to sound really, like, cliche in Jay's talk, and I apologize, but there's, like, a belief I'm seeing grow. Like, I noticed it a lot last night where, and maybe I'm putting my own feelings onto the team, which is entirely possible. It'll be the first time we've done that before. But, like, you know, it's one thing to play the Orioles and the Marlins, and now we have a real game against the Mariners. And there was the play last night against Seattle where it was the double play where Vlad had kind of had to dive to snag the ball and keep his foot on the base. And that just felt, and, like, his, the way he popped up and his reaction and sort of the bench's reaction to Bo's home run, it just kind of felt a little bigger last night. And again, this could be me just projecting. But I'm starting to come around. When they were just beating the Orioles and the Marlins, I was like, this is good. This is what they're supposed to do. But, like, show me something. It's only one game, but I'm kind of coming around on, like, maybe there is something to this team.
Yeah, they're an intoxicating team to watch when they're playing well. And then when they're playing poorly, it seems like they have these irredeemable things that they'll just never get over. But listen, coming into Wednesday's game, four back of the second wild card. And that's two back of Cleveland and then two more back of Oakland, right? So if Tampa Bay or Boston, whoever is in the East, is the first wild card, you're really only catching one of those terrible teams, right? The Yankees, Mariners, right. Cleveland, and Oakland, and or the prohibitive Astros, who look like they're going to probably run away to the West. But it's not, you know, not absolute Titans. You really, if the Rays are going to go on a huge run, it is sort of almost fine that they do if the top of the division ends up being the wild card. Just need to be focused here on playing good fundamental games, and you know, they've been doing a lot of stuff well. I'm going to get into some more stuff. We'll talk about the Jays more, because what else? A little bit of Euro and all that on the other side. While we are giving out credit to this young team, they've like run the bases well this year, and they did not do that in previous years. And
they were off. They were, like,
very impressive.
Supernaturally awful at it last year, I feel.
Vlad obviously has made big strides there, but, like, they're stealing bases at a really good rate, which they hadn't really done the last. I mean, they didn't have guys that did it, but you know, Semien quietly has 10 steals. Bichette has 12. I think that's sort of they have showcased, especially in the last little bit, that they do have a lot of different ways that this offense can get at you. They can pile it on. They can drag out at bats. Bo's really had some great at bats in the last little bit. And again, we sort of mentioned there is really just no rest at the top of that lineup. Just a lot of guys that can attack a lot of different things, and a great mix. I think is what I've sort of been noticing is Bo's aggressiveness with sort of Vlad's overall command, and then the way that Teoscar is able to sort of wait out and hit mistakes. There's a lot of different things going on at the top of that lineup, and you have to say this almost every single time, but again, adding George Springer and him eventually coming up to being, you know, the guy that he is, easy lineup to like, especially when you look at it, like, other teams struggling to score runs. Like, the Yankees have scored 75 less runs than the Jays have.
Is this you coming around to say that Trey Montoyo is a great manager and the guy for the moment and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, no, I'm with those guys. With those guys, just putting the names down. I mean, there's it's that top five is really easy to like every single day. And allows, you know, as we said, that allows you to make some interesting decisions with the rest of the spots, the kind of things you don't have to fully sell out offense like you would have in previous things and make sure that Gurriel is in there. You can have Grichuk if he's not hitting. It's like, oh well, at least we're getting, you know, positive defense in the outfield, or you add Gurriel for that extra spark at the plate, or DHing, or like, there's a lot of ways to configure it. They've done a good job with the lineup. And you know, I think a lot of team building is about you either solve the lineup and then trade for pitching, or solve the pitching and trade to add your lineup. And I just want, like, they've done a really impressive job stocking this up and sort of hitting a bunch of guys in different parts of their careers. Like there's guys in their early 20s, there's guys in their late 20s, guys in their 30s. Like there's a nice mix. As good a lineup as I have seen, and you know, that they've had, really, truly. I think that's the thing to be realizing for me, is like, as much as we mythologize the 2015 team, like, boy oh boy, and 1992 and 1993, like, offense wise damn, like, this team can hit with as well as any team we've ever seen.
Yeah, and maybe it's because, like, they're fun. Like, we've talked about the vibes before, but like, when this team's playing well, the vibes are outstanding stuff.
And I feel like, you know, Robbie Ray, we told you was going to be good.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Robbie Ray. The stat that was going around last night of him matching Clemens for the most strikeouts in the first whatever number games, I know it's true because they're talking about it, but it feels impossible and wrong.
It's wild. He's almost been note for note exactly as good as Ryu.
Yeah.
The ERAs are 3.41 and 3.43. The innings are 89.2 and 86.2. The whip is 1.104 and 1.119. Like, it's 19 walks to 21 walks. It's crazy. If he didn't give up home runs, he's given up one less earned run. Like, it's really something. He's been awesome.
It is kind of crazy to me how we talk about how Alek Manoah being okay is like solidifies the rotation. And it's kind of funny to me how that has happened for almost no, like, Manoah's been great, but like, it's not because of Manoah. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Matt's has been way better than expected. As you say, Robbie Ray's been like Ryu level good. Even Ross Stripling has sort of turned a corner to being
new Ross. Yeah.
At least serviceable. Whether you want to go into the sort of the home stretch of a season relying on Stripling as your fifth guy, I don't know, but he can't really be upset with how he's been doing.
Yeah, it's a nice injection to have Manoah as a 23-year-old in there. Because, I mean, the rest of the guys, you're talking about guys in their 30s, Ray 29. But to your point about Stripling, I sort of feel the same way about Matz, is now that you sort of,
yeah,
they've pitched about the same amount, their numbers are actually fairly similar. It just because, you know, those Matz ones sort of had a different tone to them when he looked really good. His blow-ups, he tended to blow up all at once, whereas Stripling would start his game with blow-ups and then solve them. I think there's still obviously plenty of room to push one of, if not both of those guys out of consideration when you're in a, like, nut-up game. Because, you know, at this point, Ray, Ryu, and Manoah, that's who I would say I trust.
Even Manoah, like, as much as I do trust and like him, he is still a rookie. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
and we've seen the command come and go, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know, if you're saying we have a 5-game series against the Rays, I'm not sure how I feel about it, but right now, I think it's great.
Yeah, in a 7-game series, I think he for sure is going. I think you're right, sort of that, viewing it that way. But this is last year where that Taiwan Walker deal made so much sense and looked so good.
Right.
That's the move I'm looking at now when I look at this and I think about the price again that was set with Simber and maybe taking on bad money to get somebody useful here. You mentioned Rodriguez in Pittsburgh, which I think is a nice piece for the bullpen. I think there's got to be a starter out there. They can swoop in on.
I know the the rumor mill was a churning about Berrios last week, which yes, please, I'd be into that.
That was in exchange for. You know, I mean, that's going to be a real piece going the other way.
So here's the thing, and we've come to the point in the show where I am going to be throw a little bit of recency bias on the fire, and I'm going to say trade Nate Pearson.
Okay. Wow.
The reports today of the thigh injury may, quote, maybe having something more underlying. No, thank you.
Mm.
I would like no part of that. For his sake, I hope it's nothing. I hope he has a great career. But in a win now Blue Jays environment, I don't know. Boy. If there's the right big piece guy out there that can push you over the hill, like I'm obviously of trade them all to get a World Series. Like, I don't care. Trade fucking Martin and trade them all to get a World Series. I don't care. But Pearson especially, there's a lot of red flags going up pretty quickly there, which obviously hurts his value. I understand that. But I also think that in the last 7 years or 8 years, the Blue Jays have traded a lot of big name pitching prospects, and like one and a half of them are any good.
Mm.
Like, obviously you regret Syndergaard, but other than Syndergaard, was like Matt Boyd,
and they could
and he might come back.
They could trade for Matt Boyd tomorrow for nothing. He would cost nothing,
right? But that's my point. Like, we were all sold on Jeff Hoffman too, and you know, no disrespect to those guys, but I feel like Pearson has a real attachment with the fan base, which I understand because of his hype and his timing
and how things have changed a year ago at this time.
100%, 100%, and I feel bad for him that's like the way things have swung, and I'm not suggesting to trade him for anything really to do with him in a lot of ways, but I feel like he was sort of accepted as being part of the Vlad, Bo, Cavan, whatever young core, and I did it myself. I was way up on Nate Pearson. I watched his first spring start on television last year. But it's starting to feel like he's the kind of chip you can use to turn into something really valuable when you need it this year.
It's bold. It's a bold move. I mean, listen, I'm with you in that. I like big move transactions, and anything they can do to push a chip towards taking advantage of this year, I am in favor for it. It's wild, you know, how quickly these things sort of escalated, and I think this season is a good reminder of these big swings you can have, but also the way that Windows works, right? Like, you know, I'm sure a couple of years ago, the Yankees, 2019 Yankees, I was like, oh man, we're making the LCS with this core, it's no problem, and now they're looking at this, wondering if they need to change the way their team is built. Like, it can change really quickly, and sort of how quickly, even within a season, how long ago we were just like, oh man, just do anything to improve the bullpen, anything at all. And they went out and got Adam Simber, who throws submarine 80, like 6 miles an hour. And now we're back into like, you could trade Pearson and Kirk in the same, like basically
all
in
I'm
the
saying,
same breath.
You could get, I'm just saying you could get a season altering haul for Pearson and Kirk.
Sure. In two separate deals, you could get, you know, probably four or five useful, very useful pieces, or, you know, combine to get one or two massive things. It's possible. It would be hard. That's two great juxtaposed bodies as well to get rid of one giant guy and one little tuna can.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I'm still, weird to say, but I'm more in on selling on Pearson than I am on Kirk.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Only because, like, there's such anything at all in the catching position, it's very hard to find, and you sort of...
Yeah. I'm kind of on the... I don't know what the value is, but I'm personally on the trade Danny Jansen train, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if that gets you anything.
Yeah, that is the problem, right? But I don't, maybe, right? He respected enough to get a Gold Glove nomination the other year. Or a finalist.
He's a major league catcher. Yeah. He is a major league catcher, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Before we move on, Jake, is there anything you'd like to say about whether or not it's coming home?
Oh, just that I said a couple weeks ago that I had some sources who told me that there was reports of it coming home. And those sources have told me that it is the percentage chance of it, in fact, coming home has increased. And I believe it may be coming home.
It sure seems like it's coming home. I will say that.
That being said, there would be nothing more England soccer than to have just a beauty of a path to the final and fuck it up. You could tell them they're going to lose like 1-0 to Ukraine on the weekend, and I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, the side of the bracket we talked about last time, beautifully laid out now. As after beating Germany, Portugal goes down, Netherlands goes down, France goes down, all of the group of death immediately exiled. Basically Italy, right? You're looking at this.
Italy and Belgium.
Italy and they play each other.
Yeah. You know, this is the fun of cheering for the bad guys who also don't win.
Yeah. Boy, heaven help us if it's an Italy-England final. Good Lord. Listen, it's been great drama. It's been a crazy tournament. Switzerland against France was unbelievable.
The day, what was that? On Monday, I guess, those two games, the Switzerland-France game and the, what was the other Spain. Game that day? Spain and Croatia, that's right. Crazy day. Even like Ukraine-Sweden yesterday was amazing. It's been a fun tournament.
The France game was, yeah, it has been, it's been a great tournament. I said it last time as well. It's up there as like most fun 2-3 week things that there are in all of sports. I'm thrilled.
And immediately miss it when it's like not on it all day, every day.
And now the stakes never been higher. The knockout games, what a great slate.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday. It's good timing.
This is great stuff. There's been a bunch of NBA. NBA has progressed. We're close
to... It's been a long time since I've been able to watch the NBA playoffs with like no bitterness or rooting interest, because either the Raptors were in it or they had lost or whatever. Man, the NBA is so good.
Now, do you have any even like sliver of like, oh man, if in a real season the Raptors are a playoff team in this situation?
Yeah, probably.
And like,
it's hard to look at how this season shook out and then not be like, well, they'd be like the fourth seed, no problem.
Yeah, I keep doing that, and then I keep remembering like they didn't have a center, right? Like,
yeah,
that was a
it took them till like March to get a center.
That was legit. Like, it was pretty ugly anytime they played a team.
That being said, if you're gonna tell me that they got to not play in Toronto, had to not play in Toronto for a year, then they end up with the fourth overall pick and can reload for next year, and they come back to Toronto, then I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, if there was going to be a year off, so to speak, and that year didn't happen in Toronto with no fans in the middle of a pandemic, I'm kind of fine with it.
Pretty good, the way the Raptors, result. Yeah, all things considered.
I think I really went from like being frustrated that they weren't doing well to acceptance to being like, this could actually be really great for the franchise really quickly.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's the nature of the beast, right?
Yeah.
I agree in terms of the way it broke. It was sort of... like you said, it was a lost season anyway. It's going to be right. Crap anyway. Even if that dreamland now where we're like, imagine they did sort of sneak in, like, what are they going to have, the conference finals in Tampa? Like, there's no chance.
Right.
There's
exactly. No chance. Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Like, half the fun last night was the Atlanta crowd. Like, you're not going to get that with the Raptors in Tampa. It's no fun.
Great stuff. Heavily pulling for Suns versus Hawks. I think that's so good.
Me too.
I think that's such a great... Like, listen, it's been a cursed, weird year, and everything that possibly could go wrong basically has gone wrong. Let's get a weird champion.
I really want Chris Paul to win a title.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it? So there you go. And the Canadiens might win the Stanley Cup. Who knows?
No, I'm ignoring that till it's over, and then I will praise the Lightning if they win, and never mention again if the Habs win. Lifelong Tampa Bay Lightning fan right here.
Hard to believe. hard to believe this has happened. But that one, I harbor no, none of the Raptors like what if thing. I was like, I'm firmly still like they would have gotten eaten alive by the Jets or pummeled to death by the Knights. There's just no way.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. There's no, the Leafs need to show me
team full of frauds.
That would have literally anything. But that being said, run it back.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no need to trade Marner. Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah,
agreed. We got it. And that covers everything. So we're going to answer your questions and more after this. We, Rue 4, giving you things to do and listen to and watch and say. Not say. Listen to, though. We start off with the music. Jake, the certified music knower about her. What would you say your pick is this week for Song of the Week?
Song of the Week this week is Sun Showers by Yasmin Williams. I sort of came across her record. I don't remember who it was. Someone on Twitter posted it as one of their tops of the year thus far. And sort of in that halfway through the year point where I start, especially because like now that there's no, I haven't been on TTC in 16 months, so much of my like time to check out new music doesn't exist.
Right.
So I felt I was sort of falling behind. So these halfway lists have been great to sort of take a look at and be like, oh, I haven't heard that. I'll check that out. And whoever posted that this was one of the tops of the year is absolutely correct. It's a very cool record. The record is called Urban Driftwood. I don't know when it came out, sometime this year. But it's a great little record that I highly recommend. Yasmin Williams is a very cool guitarist and songwriter, and you should listen to it.
Excellent. Match of the Week this week is just a simple celebration of the fact that we are back. Dynamite is on Wednesdays again, so AE Double Dude starts back up. Twitch.tv/WrestlingBrain is back, so get to do that again. It makes for a busy Wednesday, but it's a fun thing to do. I like to do it, you know?
Well, and more and more people are saying
People are saying it, and you're hearing it. Those two things are happening in tandem. Jake, anything especial on the old television lately?
No. We watched Face Off on the weekend. That was fun.
Ooh, we watched Con Air.
Oh, you know what? We almost watched Con Air.
We watched Con Air, and we left it on AMC for like 6 hours at one point. We watched Con Air and Karate Kid, and then a new TV show.
Yeah, we've started doing 90s movies on Saturday nights.
Pretty decent.
Which we just pick some that we haven't seen in a while.
Blockbusters. Fun.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Blockbusters and rom-coms.
Yeah, they had it. We had it right. We had it right.
Yeah.
We watched, it is called Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Oh, Annie Murphy's show.
Yes, Annie Murphy's show. I don't know. I don't even know if we like it or not. We watched the first three episodes, but it switches between being a traditional, like, Everyone Loves Raymond, three-camera sitcom to, like, your gritty, very darkly lit prestige drama. So Annie Murphy sort of shows you the other side of the TV wife and the hypothetical, like, Big Bang Theory-esque dumb husband, naggy wife sort of reality. Yeah, it's neat to have something new. It's sort of, I don't know, I wonder sort of about the length of the ability to drag out the, like, she wants to kill her husband thing, but we'll see. I'm going to give it a shot because it's something different. Something different going on.
Cool. Yeah, I hear good things.
We move on to the mailbag, wherein Drew asks us, what is one amenity that stadiums lack that you would add to improve the stadium or game experience?
It's a really good question. So I feel like we're asking, like we're not asking Skydome. We're asking all stadiums.
Yes.
Like what don't they have to improve a game?
What don't stadiums have to improve the game?
I feel like we're coming along pretty well with stadiums. I have to admit. Sight lines are better than they've ever been. Seats are pretty decent. Food and drink options, obviously, but if you're not in Toronto, there's lots of that.
Hmm. I'm with you, man. sight lines and that sort of thing is it's hard because I'm easy to please. I'm very easy to please. I'm sure there is an amenity that somebody who has a need or feels like their voice is not being heard or seen would probably have something to say. But as already a baseball fan, I got most of what I need. Improve the stadium or in-game experience. You know, they've added all that and all that bougie stuff, like being able to order food that comes to your that stuff already exists.
I feel like the only thing to improve is almost taking things away.
Yeah.
There's the debate of basketball games. Like, is there too much noise pumped in? Is there too much distraction?
Yeah.
Et cetera.
I guess stadium just covers that as well. So, yeah.
You could make the argument that, yeah, get rid of all the interstitial music noise stuff or tone it down or whatever. Like, I get that. But, you know, outside of that, I don't know. I feel like the in-person in-game viewing experience is as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, I think less is more is probably right. I sometimes go to those things and I'm like, man, who is this for, all this music?
Yeah.
Who's having a better time because this is here? Doesn't feel like anybody.
We do not need in-stadium DJs. Yeah. I'll say that much.
Mid-awesome with a hypothetical. Say you were abducted by aliens and they take you to their home planet. Would you rather be put in their zoo or in their circus?
Oh, circus. Let me perform.
Oh, see, zoo. Yeah.
I guess zoo, you get to just
do nothing. Yeah, 100%.
I just think I want people watching me 24 hours a day.
Okay. I see that. I feel like the circus life when people aren't watching is probably also not great.
It's probably not great, but at least you have you can be I don't know. I've seen TV shows. You can at least be a person a little bit. You can
be the star. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sort of raise a larger conversation. There has been more disclosure, more and more as you and I age, Jake. We're seeing more and more UFO disclosure from governments. I'm sure you've seen some of this. That the Navy or the U.S. Army was like, yeah, we don't know what that is. It's probably a UFO. Do you feel like when you were younger, you expected this to be a bigger deal, or is it that if you were to actually seriously think about it too much, it would be hard for you to have a normal life?
Both.
Right.
I would have thought it's a bigger deal, but also the way we consume media and news now is everything should be a bigger deal.
Right. Yeah.
Like we're also proving that we're such adaptive creatures. We've literally just gone through a worldwide pandemic. And it's just okay.
I wonder if we're about to have, probably not, but because of that ability to sort of quickly process things, if really, really strange alien shit is if we're going to go to the next level with our alien visitors, you know what I mean?
I truly don't think that anything now, because of the way we consume news and media and everything, nothing will ever be I don't know what would have to happen for us all to stop and really be I think about things 9/11, you know, mm-hmm. where everybody was just whoa, and everything stopped and we all watched the news and all that. I truly don't know what would have to happen for that to happen again.
I mean, yeah.
I have no idea.
People storming the Capitol. That was pretty wild.
But it was while it was happening, people were already being but.
Yeah, it's true. Isn't that weird? I was thinking the way you were going to say that, it was there's almost no way that they can do an aliens are real reveal that would even have an impact, because people would.
That's what I mean.
There's no way that people would not even accept it as they'd be okay. They wouldn't even, you know what I mean?
You could have an alien, an actual alien in the flesh on screen being we are aliens. And I feel everyone would just be getting jokes off on Twitter.
It's probably true. Yeah, because I feel if you actually sat and thought about it, right, it would be hard to do a lot of the things you're supposed to normally do, right? Your questions would be well, why aren't we doing something about the fact that there's aliens?
If you think about everything that happened in the last 18 months, none of us should be getting out of bed,
right?
Ever.
Split Letters asked us, "What ballpark food do you miss the most?" AKA, what are you immediately going to get when you get back to the dome?
This is kind of a cop-out answer, but it's also a very specific answer. I really miss specifically ballpark shitty beer.
Ooh.
Like, we were rewatching Futurama the other day, and it's the episode where Bender is making beer inside himself, and the joke is, like, he's pregnant with beer. And Fry has a line where he's like, I hope it's a lager so I can take it to a ball game. And that, like, specific kind of shitty, like, Labatt lager at a baseball game is, to me, such a very nostalgic taste and smell. And, like, none of it's even, like, you don't even enjoy it, really. And it's, like, warm by the time you finish it. But just, like, a bad draft Molson or Labatt or Bud.
Yeah, I gotta get one of those big old pretzels with the mustard.
Just like shit. Like, I don't care about whatever poutines they have.
Sure.
Give me the worst beer and, like, a stale pretzel.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Also, it's a great place to eat peanuts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's toss them on the floor. Who cares?
Whatever. You're not cleaning up. Yeah. YJs, do you think the house exists? It's Pantina Drum House.
I don't think I get this question.
You know, I think there must be. I don't know where all these drums are coming from otherwise. No doubt Detmers with the last question. West End versus East End debate. Jake, I think you are uniquely skilled at handling this.
Yeah, well, so I grew up on the East End of Toronto. Grew up on the Danforth. Moved to the West End when I moved back to Toronto. And have not left the West End of Toronto since I moved back. I used to be a very, like, strident West End person. Big East End is trash guy. I think I've softened on a little bit. I was saying this to some friends a couple weeks ago about how the pandemic has made, like, the idea of being like, yeah, I get on the subway for 25 minutes, but you get to see a bunch of people at a bar. It's like, yeah, that's fine. I don't mind that now.
Yeah.
East End's fine. I do like sort of the living quite centrally as I do now, or Central West, I guess. I do like the neighborhoody aspect of the East End.
Yeah.
You can get that in the West End as well. Like, there are obviously lots of neighborhoods on the West Side as well, but there is a very, like, nice community neighborhood vibe to the East End, which I feel very nostalgic for, because that's what I grew up, where I grew up. So I would say that I am more pro West End now, but I am definitely not anti East End. That's my politician, middle of the road, centrist answer.
Yeah. So you, West End, you mean like Etobicoke, right?
No.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. I'm kidding.
You fucking kidding me?
I'm kidding.
That's not Toronto.
I'm kidding. You know, listen, it's been 8-9 months since I lived there. So I assume all the stuff I like is gone and it's completely different. So I don't even know.
It's actually another good point. I have no idea what's on the Danforth. None.
I'm sure every place I like is closed and everything I liked is now, like, obvious, so that not popular. So yeah, listen, I lived West End most of the time I lived there. I liked living central as well. I liked living in the North End, frankly, quite honestly, with you, was where I enjoyed the most. Living at Davisville and Mount Pleasant was really fun, and living at St. Clair and Bathurst as a 30-something was awesome. Like you said, that neighborhoody vibe, but also very easy to get on subway lines and very easy to get to anything, and, like, everything was 20 minutes away. It was, like, I loved it up there. I lived Roncesvalles and liked it as well. You know, I lived Lakeshore, which I look back, I probably would have moved away earlier. It was fun a little bit. It's something I always wanted to do, but I liked living uptown way, way, way more. It's a cop out, but yeah, North End and then West End as well. But boy, oh boy, I don't even know where I would go now if we had to move back. I don't have no idea where we would go. Probably Etobicoke. Like, I don't even know.
You don't think you'd just go back to sort of north?
I have no idea what we would do if we had to move back. Who knows? Anyway, that is it for another week's mailbag. We will close it up and we will finish things off by answering the question once and forever on our minds, whether we are sad or not sad, for another week after this. Hey And we close things out talking about whether we are sad or not sad for another week. And this week, obviously, this is coming out July 1st. We wanted to sort of include, you know, we're not a hugely, like, flag-waving, go Canada, have a great Canada Day sort of podcast anyway. But this year, obviously, you know, with all the news about residential schools and the unmarked graves and the atrocities and the genocide that has been coming to light and that we're reckoning with currently, just thought it was important to sort of talk about that and sort of make sure that that continues to be something that is part of our conversation as Canadians and as people who are able to talk to sort of our audience and people who listen to this.
Yeah, I think that... You know, I think it's obviously great that there... Not great. It sucks that... It's awful that there has to be this conversation to begin with. But I think that it's good that we're... The sort of Cancel Canada Day and the... not... The no fireworks and the not being rah-rah Canada stuff is starting to... I don't want to say go mainstream, because that's, I think, a trite way of putting it, but... is being earnestly discussed. But I also think that it is... I hope that it's not just for Canada Day 2021. You know what I mean? I think that we will... I think this is these are conversations and attitudes and actions and all these things that we need to be having every day, especially, you know, white settler people in this country. You know, it canceling Canada Day is great and should be done, no question, but we also need to cancel Canada Day in 2022, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I think, and not even Canada specifically, we should be having these conversations every day, and we're going to, as more news of the various many atrocities that were committed come out. And I think that it's, you know, go donate money. And like, I don't mean that in like a donate money or you're bad, but like, this is not just there needs to be action here, I think. And it's gotta be more than just not setting off fireworks for a day. And it's just, and it's about listening, and it's about, you know, following Indigenous activists on social media and listening to Indigenous voices. And hearing what, rather than sort of scolding, like not scolding, but rather than like, you know, not doing whatever for a day, listen to those who have been wronged about what they need and what they want, and, you know, appreciate Indigenous art. And I think it's just, it's going to be a long-term, it has to be a long-term thing. And it's not just about Canada Day. It's about reckoning with the horrendous genocidal history of our country. And I hope this sort of, I know it won't, but I hope this puts the meanwhile in Canada crowd to bed a little bit.
Yeah. And not only and very well said, I think it's not an easy thing, especially for us in our situation as like white guys who have had very little issue with anything like this. Easy for us to, speak on it in a way that we're able to sound intentionally intelligent, even in the slightest, even by accident.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those great words in terms of like, it is a great start to be sort of recognizing these days and not doing the celebrating, but also, you know, taking that time to do personal work and learning more about the land that you're on and the maybe the treaties that are probably being broken out in front of you. The things that, aren't being honored, and you know, again, the history and the atrocities that came in the past, as well as stuff like the lack of clean water in communities to this day. You know, people that aren't being given a opportunity to have any quality of life at all. And it goes on, you know, to this day. So, yeah, I think that following that up with action is a really important point to make. And that does it for us this week. If you're looking for more Sportsfeld, you can always get it. Patreon.com/sportsfeldmailbags and lookbacks. and ad-free episodes and more, all kinds of stuff. Patreon.com/Sportsfeld to get all of that. We will talk to you next week. In the meantime, we thank you very much for listening to Sportsfeld.